Taoism, Buddhism, and Islam have all seen a significant increase in believers. But there's been one religion in particular which has experienced phenomenal growth. The Chong'i Church in Hangzhou is the biggest Chinese Christian church in the world.
For 100 years, Chinese governments have tried to discredit and destroy religion and religious practices in China. They have all failed. Like the phoenix from the ashes, religion is alive and expanding in China today. Hello, I'm Annabelle Quince, and this is Rear Vision on RN, RA, and via the web. Today, we trace the survival of religion in China. Prior to the 20th century, China was ruled by emperors for over 1,000 years, and the cornerstone of Imperial China was religion. David Palmer teaches in the Department of Sociology at the Hong Kong University and is the author of The Religious Question in Modern China. He spoke to me via Skype.
China was as religious a society as India. There were temples and shrines literally on every street block, and also inside every house, at least one shrine, if not several, shrines to the ancestors, shrines to the earth gods. Every single social organization, whether the basic organization of a village or an organized group of craftsmen, a trade guild, all of these organizations were really organized along religious lines around the cult to their patron deities. And the emperor was not only an administrator, but he was the high priest of the empire. He was the one who derived his legitimacy from heaven and who conducted the sacrifices to heaven. And the mandarins, the administrators of the empire, were not only administrators, but they were also, they had a ritual role. And so this Chinese system of government was one which combined and in fact totally merged administrative and religious functions.
China's imperial administration was based on the ideas and teaching of Confucianism. Fan Gaoyao is professor of sociology at Purdue University and the author of Religion in China, Surviving and Reviving Under Communist Rule.
Mainstream Confucianism had more focus on life in this world. It's about here and now. Confucius himself and other Confucius scholars in the early periods had little to say about life beyond this world and about the spiritual things. For people who want to seek some answers about those questions, they tend to resort to Buddhism, Taoism, sometimes really elementary beliefs. I went to a traditional town in Shanxi province a few years ago. The county governor, who's supposed to be a Confucian scholar, also worshipped a fox, a spirit of fox, and believed that the fox could protect his power. It's very strange, but I think that might not be uncommon in the imperial time.
Traditional China was indeed a very pluralistic society in terms of religion. And in terms of specific religious traditions, of course, what is called the three teachings, the San Jiao of Confucianism, Buddhism, and Taoism had a certain orthodox status, but it's hard to compare them to the way we understand religions in the modern world. These three teachings could be said to be, you could call them a scriptural canon and a body of specialists. So for the Buddhists, a body of monks. For the Taoists, a body of priests. For the Confucianism, a body of scholars and ritualists. So these specialists who had access to this scriptural or classical knowledge then worked for local or social groups which, for the most part, were not affiliated to any particular religious tradition. So for example, if you were a wealthy family, at the funeral of a member of your family, you would hire Taoist priests to conduct funerary rituals, Chinese Buddhist monks, Tibetan Buddhist monks, Confucian ritualists, as many different types of priests that you could afford to hire, the more the better. And so this overlaying of different religious traditions was commonplace.
During the 19th century, Imperial China encountered the power of the West. Nations like Britain and the United States imposed humiliating treaties on the emperor and created foreign concessions in China's ports. This encounter led to a questioning by Chinese elite of China's traditional religions and practices.
Really, it started to change around the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century. And this can really only be seen in the context of the encounter between China and the West. This encounter and the humiliations that were associated with this encounter for China really caused a profound soul-searching in China and a putting into question of the entire traditional Chinese social and cultural system. And so as Chinese intellectuals reflected on what was going on here, they came to the conclusion that part of the humiliation, part of the weakness of China vis-a-vis the West was a result of its traditional social cultural order, including the practices which, as anthropologists, we would call religious. Kang Youwei, one of the leading reformers of China, initiated a movement to convert all of these millions of temples in China, to remove all the idols in those temples, all the deities, and turn them into schools. And so in one stroke, to modernize China by creating a modern educational system, and in the same stroke, eliminate the entire religious foundations of traditional Chinese society.
In 1911, Imperial China collapsed, and the Republic of China was declared under the leadership of Sun Yat-sen, and the process of modernization accelerated.
Only a few years into the Republican period, there was the so-called New Culture Movement. That's around 1919. At that time, the Chinese cultural elites, and also even political elites, really want to modernize China because China was defeated when facing Western powers like Britain or France. And they looked for reasons why they were defeated. Political and the cultural elites, some of them, thought that the real problem was the traditional political system or ideological system of Confucianism. And Confucianism was considered really holding China back. So they began to advocate to remove influence of Confucianism first in the political life, then also from the mainstream culture. In 1905, the imperial exam system was abolished because the exam system was to select government officials through examining the four books of Confucianism. But once that imperial examination system was abolished, Confucianism really basically quickly fell apart. And a few years later, those intellectuals who really want to modernize China thought that we could really discard Confucianism for something new, mostly two things, democracy and science. So there's Mr. Science and Mr. Democracy advocated around 1919.
The Republican period was dominated by instability and the rise of the Chinese Communist Party. By 1949, after years of war, the Republic was pushed out of China and Mao Zedong established the People's Republic of China.
On the one hand, they certainly had an ideological motivation to completely eliminate religion from China, and that was the ultimate goal. But they were also very pragmatic. And they, at the level of the long-term religious policy of China, the idea was really to change the infrastructure, so change the economic base of the society. And with the transformation of China into a truly communist, classless society, then there would no longer be any need for religion, and religion would naturally disappear. So that was the long-term vision, although, of course, at the level of the implementation of religious policy, radicalism and political extremism became an important factor. And so during the Maoist period, certainly the move to quickly eliminate religion in a forcible way. And so really what you had is the interplay between these two attitudes, one which said, let's protect religion, let's not alienate religious people, and so let's provide them with space within the socialist system, on the one hand, and a more radical activist political attitude, which wanted to, in a sense, expedite the elimination of religion. And so, especially during the Maoist period, in a sense, you have the interplay between these two attitudes.
Initially, the communists did try to co-opt five major religions into approved associations.
The first 7 or 8 years in power, they were busy with other more urgent tasks. Religion didn't play a major role. The party helped to establish the national associations for five religions. The traditional ones of Buddhism, Taoism, Islam, Catholicism, then Protestantism. That's the five religions.
What did this mean for many of the religious rituals traditionally practiced by ordinary Chinese?
For the ordinary people, religious life centered around the worship of ancestors, really in their own family shrines, and around the festivals and rituals of local temples. That type of religion was directly and primarily indirectly the target of campaigns to destroy it, directly in the sense that all of this was categorized as superstition, as feudal superstition, and so it had to be eliminated as a vestige of feudalism, and indirectly, simply that through the land reform campaigns in the 1950s, in which all the land was separated and then taken away from landlords and then divided amongst the peasants, all of this reorganization of land had the result of destroying the fabric of local Chinese religion, because temples, they owned land. So they were, in a sense, property-owning entities, and so their land was taken away, and even the buildings themselves were converted to other purposes.
You're with Rear Vision on RN, RA, and via the web. I'm Annabelle Quince, and today we're tracing the transformation of religious life in China, from the imperial period through to today. In 1966, the Cultural Revolution began, a political and ideological campaign aimed at reviving China's revolutionary spirit. As part of that campaign, all religions and religious practices were banned. Churches, temples, mosques, and other shrines were closed, and religious followers like monks and scholars were forced to return to secular life.
From 1966 to 1979, for 13 years, officially, there was no church or temple or mosque was open for religious service. On the surface, at least, there was no religion in China. And China was the most secular country in the world, or the most anti-religious government for that period of time. The only other one I could find was Albania. So only two countries totally banned religion in the whole society. But that is really only in the public, as more and more scholars doing research about that period, they find that religion was kept alive underground. The Christian churches, they had underground churches worshiping at people's homes, or even in the mountains, in forest, in the wilderness. Also, those Buddhist monks, all of them supposed to be returned to their secular life, to their home village. But some of the monks, like in the Shaolin Temple, they had no family, nowhere to return to. So they stayed at Shaolin Temple. But the Shaolin Temple was not open for religious practice. They became part of the commune, the communist commune. They became the commune farmers. But actually, some of those monks later on, when they were interviewed, they said they actually kept a secret practice during those 13 years, only that they were not doing that in any public setting. Of course, Muslims persisted throughout that period of time. Also, I think what's really interesting is when religion was not in any public life, because the traditional impact is still there, many people still were used to those folk religious practices. Only now that they could not do that in the name of religion. So they try to express their religion or religious feelings, sentiments in other ways. One interesting way or weird way is expressing their religion or religious feelings toward the communist leader, Chairman Mao. So the Chairman Mao personality worship was really very widely spread and very widely practiced. So even though that's not religion per se, but for a sociologist of religion like me, really see that as an expression of religious feelings or ideas through certain kinds of religious rituals.
The Cultural Revolution had a profound effect, although in hindsight, especially for Christianity and also Tibetan Buddhism and Islam. So in fact, practically all of the different religions. At one level, it was a period of total repression and mass destruction of religion. But this also led to a strengthening of religious identities. So for example, among the Protestants, it was really during the Cultural Revolution that the so-called house churches started to expand and to grow. So during the Cultural Revolution, even what had, until the 1960s, been the forms of religion that were officially recognized by the state, even those were banned. So there was no legal form of religion whatsoever in China during the Cultural Revolution from the 1969 until the late 1970s. And so only underground religion could continue to exist. And so it was during this period then that networks of underground evangelists started to form and traveled around China, proselytized, and started to build congregations. And these congregations were completely independent of any form of outside help. So they were entirely self-subsisting. They could survive and expand under conditions of repression. And so they were extremely strong and resilient. Similar for the Catholics. The Cultural Revolution was a time that really alienated many Tibetans from the socialist regime. At that time, Tibetan Buddhism was almost entirely banned, and so this really alienated many Tibetan people. And so it was at this time that a strong sense of Tibetan Buddhist identity among many Tibetans was actually reinforced as a result of that. Among Muslims, the Cultural Revolution saw cases of Muslims being forced to eat pork or even pork being thrown into their wells so that the water they drank would be contaminated. You know, all of these incidents actually strengthened the identity, the religious identity of many religious believers, and it was really from this core of believers of these different religions. It was out of these people that once the opening up policy came into effect after 1979, they had more space and the religious communities could start to reestablish themselves and expand quite rapidly.
The Cultural Revolution and the repression of religion ended after Mao's death. Leng Shi is Professor of East Asian History at Hanover College and the author of Redeemed by Fire, The Rise of Popular Christianity in Modern China. He spoke via Skype.
Mao died in 1976. And by 1979, with Deng Xiaoping in power, and this new generation of Chinese leadership decided to sort of reclaim their legitimacy, their political legitimacy, by trying to restore Chinese societies to some kind of normalcy. And that, they decided, would include some form, some degree of religious tolerance. And so in 1979, the churches were reopened.
And I'm just wondering whether many Chinese at that stage certainly by towards the end of the Cultural Revolution, would have actually described themselves as atheists, would not have seen themselves as being religious.
Yeah, in terms of identity, actually not only by the end of that period, even until today, most Chinese would say they are atheist. If you ask, do you have any religion? Most people would say, no, I don't have a religion. That does not mean all Chinese became atheists. By the end of that period, in 1979, when churches, temples, and mosques were reopened, people began to get back to their religious services, and the government counted how many were still believers. The number of Catholics remained about the same as before the Cultural Revolution. That's about 3 million. The Protestants, before the Cultural Revolution, there were less than a million. But after the 13 years of no religion in the public, they had tripled to 3 million.
And that's what really took the communist leadership by surprise. Because at some point in 1966, some of the top communist leadership were actually proclaiming that they had eliminated religion overnight, believing that by destroying churches, church buildings, temples, they would actually have accomplished that task. But of course, the reality is quite different. I think that it was precisely during that period of repression when all visible, established, institutionalized forms of religion were gone. It was during that period that this very flexible, this non-institutional form of underground Christianity was able to flourish, because religion in the Christian form addressed the needs of people. Some of the real flourishing of Christianity actually happened during the Cultural Revolution. And I guess in part that the harshness of that revolution drove many people into the arms of religion.
And was that true for other religions as well besides Christianity?
I think so, although I'm afraid to a lesser extent. And I suspect the main reason being that Christianity, as you know, is a congregational religion, in contrast to most popular forms of religion in China. Buddhism will be centered around a monastery or a temple, or likewise Taoism. So when you destroy those buildings, you don't have a place to go. And because those religions are not congregational, you don't have a routine meetings. But the Christians, of course, they have their weekly worship. And even when those buildings, those physical places were destroyed, they were able to continue.
We did a survey in 2007. There's about 18% of the Chinese willing to identify with Buddhism, 3.2% identify with Christianity. There are very few people identify with Taoism, not that many with Islam. But that's still a relatively minority in the population. In that survey, we also asked what do people believe and what do people practice. When we add things together, we could say that actually in China, even though more than half of the population claim to be atheists, 85% of people have some religious beliefs or have engaged religious practice in the previous year. So there's no more than 15% who could be somehow considered real atheists or pure atheists, who do not have beliefs in the supernatural, who do not participate in religious activities.
3.2% may not sound like many, but when you realize that China has a population of more than 1.3 billion, that's a lot of Christians. And you can be guaranteed there are many Chinese who practice but don't admit to being Christians. So while groups like Falun Gong and Uyghur are known because of the persecution they have suffered, the impressive story in China at the moment is the growth of Protestant Christianity.
Zhejiang, in the country's affluent southeast, is a hub of Christianity. In some cities here, it's estimated that 1 in 10 people are Christians. The reason the real figure isn't known is that there are two types of churches in China.
One has to admit that the relative religious tolerance which the post-Mao communist leadership embraced did contribute to this growth. As churches opened across China, particularly in urban areas, they met the need of many people. And then after some moments of crisis, particularly in the case of 1989, the Tiananmen massacre, which precipitated this real disenchantment with communism, and that did turn many people to Christianity. But I think that only accounts for part of this revival, this flourishing of Christianity. I'm afraid the bigger story is a story that is not seen in the urban area, the story that happens in the rural area, where the kind of Christianity that has really flourished and really exploded is this unofficial, unauthorized, spontaneous, sometimes very idiosyncratic and unruly form of Christianity.
The latter are also called house churches because they meet in informal locations. They're known as underground because to be a member is to belong to an illegal body, and the authorities are wary of any group that organises any type of activities without government control.
And is there a political dimension to those churches?
The Chinese church, by and large, tend to be quite apolitical. They do not discuss political matters. It does not have the tradition of political activism. Now, that does not mean that it does not have the political potential. Quite the contrary, I think despite this appearance of political apathy, it does contain, in fact, great and perhaps explosive political energy. As I see it, the Chinese people have had this tradition of suppressing their political aspirations. But eventually, at some point, particularly during moments of crisis, these suppressed aspirations or discontent tend to erupt in very violent ways. So in the long run, in fact, there is great political potential, although I'm afraid it's a kind of explosive and possibly very destructive political potential with popular religion, Christianity included, which is why the Chinese leaders are so concerned, so afraid of religion. And the Westerners must have been really baffled by this obsession on the part of Chinese leadership when it comes to Falun Gong, for instance. And for the same reason, they have been persecuting, suppressing Christian churches, directing most of their suppression toward underground Christianity. Again, it's the fear that there is this hidden, latent political potential in these churches.
Ling Xi, author of Redeemed by Fire, The Rise of Popular Christianity in Modern China. My other guests were Fan Gao Niao, author of Religion in China, Surviving and Reviving Under Communist Rule, and David Palmer, author of The Religious Question in Modern China. Information regarding all my guest books will be on the Rear Vision website, abc.net.au/radionational, and follow the prompts to Rear Vision. Today's sound engineer is Timothy Nicastri. I'm Annabelle Quince, and this is Rear Vision on RN. Thanks as always for joining us.
Hello, it's Norman Swan here, sitting in for Geraldine Doogue on Saturday Extra. Great program for you. Bob Gottliebson talking about who's profiting from the Greek crisis and now the Spanish crisis. Laurie Garrett from the Council on Foreign Relations talking about what we don't know is in our medications, given the globalization of medications. We've got the Afghani archaeologist who complained to the Taliban about antiquities. Lots for you. So download a podcast of Saturday Extra from RN's website.